over a dozen pilgrims, including women and children, dead. Condemnations are pouring in from across the world following a terrorist attack on a holy shrine in southern Iran. And a new survey says over two-thirds of Britons are to cut back on festive spending this year due to the worsening cost of living crisis. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. A terrorist attack on a holy shrine in the Iranian city of Shiraz in Fars province leaves over a dozen people dead. The Interior Minister has confirmed 13 deaths, which include women and children. According to provincial office officials, over two dozen people were also injured in the attack at the Shah Cheragh Shrine, which is one of Iran's most popular pilgrimage sites. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility for the attack. A gunman started shooting from one of the entrances of the shrine. He then headed to the main compound, firing at pilgrims and staff. Officials say that the perpetrator has been arrested and the situation is being investigated. Earlier, political analyst Sayed Mohsin Abbas gave us his perspective on the terrorist attack in Shiraz. He said the attack is yet another desperate attempt by Western powers to destabilize Iran after inciting recent riots in the country.
Quite clearly, it seems from all the reports so far that this is a particularly Takfiri and Daesh-spun attack. Now, we know where the money strings and the puppet strings of the Daesh and Takfiri terrorists go. We know that they go back to the capital, Washington, D.C. They go back to the capitals of Western Europe. It's, first of all, an act of desperation because it shows how desperate the Zaire Western imperialist powers are now to bring down Iran. They are using the interim period of the JCPOA, if you like, agreement lull before the midterm elections that Joe Biden is facing to try and do everything they can, first of all, to frighten and scare the Islamic government into complying. Secondly, to make the population despondent, I think, through these acts of terrorism, upsetting the law and order, creating sort of violent protests, using the pretext of the false pretext of hijab as a way of trying to create color revolutions in Iran. All of it is a sign of desperation. It's a sign that actually they've run out of ideas. They really don't have anything else other than to copy and paste and repeat what they've done in the past.
Earlier, we talked to Hakime Sakai Biria in Tehran, a university professor who joined us with her take on the terrorist attack.
This is a sad day for the people of Iran, but it is nothing new. And the Islamic Republic has been experiencing this sort of terrorism from the beginning, because it is based on a revolution that wants to free the nation from foreign interference. It is based on a revolution that wants to have Iran independent and strong. And of course, there are many enemies that don't want that to happen. And if you look at the foreign elements that are supporting the current riots in Iran, you see that almost all of them have terroristic backgrounds. The goal is basically to create insecurity in the country, create a sense of instability. So these kind of terroristic activity actually brings out the truth that what is the real goal of these sort of, things that are happening currently.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has condemned the terrorist attack on the holy Shah Cheragh Shrine in the city of Shiraz, saying that the evil assault will definitely not go unanswered. In a statement, Raisi also expressed his condolences to the families of the pilgrims who were killed or injured in the attack. He said the country's security and law enforcement agencies would make the perpetrators and masterminds of the crime regretful and would teach them a lesson. The Iranian president added the history shows that the country's enemies resort to violence and terror as they have failed to break the national unity. The deadly terrorist attack has drawn condemnations from several national and international figures. Condemnations are pouring in both from inside Iran and abroad following a terror attack on a holy shrine, which left over a dozen people dead. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman has strongly condemned the terrorist attack, saying this is exactly what the so-called advocates of human rights want to see in Iran. Nasser Kanani added in a tweet that for the false advocates of human rights, the ends justify the means. The attack also drew international reactions. Mohammed Ali al-Houthi, a senior member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, expressed his condolences and sympathized with the families of the victims. Said Omar al-Hakim, the head of Iraq's National Wisdom Coalition, also condemned the attack. The UN chief spokesman also condemned the terrorist attack while condoling with the people. 3 days of public mourning has been announced in the southern Fars province where the attack took place. According to provincial officials, the armed assailant is a 30-year-old man who is not a national of Iran and has entered the country from one of the neighboring countries. Iran has slapped sanctions on nearly two dozen European Union entities and individuals for supporting terror activities during the recent riots in the country. Foreign Ministry Hossein Amir Abdollahian said that those blacklisted include 8 institutions and 12 individuals. He said the bans are imposed in response to EU's unconstructive measures against the Islamic Republic. Amir Abdollahian said the targeted entities and individuals were found supporting and inciting terror, extremism, and violence in Iran. The top diplomat once again warned the EU against pursuing its failed and well-worn approach towards Iran. He made the remarks during a meeting with his Belarusian counterpart in Tehran. A new survey shows 2/3 of Britons are planning to cut back on festive spending this year amid a worsening cost of living crisis. The survey says about 50% of the participants are to cut back on gifts and 46% are on eating out. Some 35% are planning to cut back on general socializing and food and drink at home. The UK's cost of living crisis started in 2001, with essential goods prices increasing faster than household revenues. With inflation running at 10%, UK consumer confidence remains close to its gloomiest on record. Consumers face a tighter economic squeeze in 2023 after Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt scrapped tax cuts planned by former Prime Minister Liz Truss. He also scaled back her vast energy support scheme for households. Britain's new prime minister has been grilled in Parliament during his first question hour session since taking office. Opposition lawmakers accused Rishi Sunak of making, quote, a grubby deal by reinstating Suella Braverman as Home Secretary.
Mr. Speaker, he's so weak, he's done a grubby deal, exactly, creating national security because he was scared to lose another leadership election.
Labour Party also criticised Sunak for breaking his pledge to restore the government's integrity and professionalism. Sunak, however, defended the return of Braverman to Home Office, saying that she had already apologised for her mistakes. Braverman was sacked as cabinet minister by former Prime Minister Liz Truss for breaching ministerial codes when she was sent sensitive official documents from her personal email. Some politicians claim that Braverman had endorsed Sunak as Tory leader after gaining guarantees that she would get her job back. Israel's recent killings of Palestinians in the West Bank has drawn condemnations from Palestinian Foreign Ministry as well as several other countries. In this edition of the News Review, this is what we discuss.
On this segment of the program, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry is calling on the International Criminal Court to probe the Israeli crimes in the occupied territories. The ministry has condemned continued deadly aggression against Palestinians. Also, Iran and Jordan have separately denounced Israeli raids across the occupied territories, calling on the international community to protect Palestinians. Meanwhile, the European Union has expressed its regret over the latest killings in the West Bank, but stopped short of condemning the regime's crimes. The Israeli military raids on Nablus and Ramallah left six Palestinians dead early on Tuesday. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have our correspondent, Mona Kandil, who's with us from Ramallah. Also joining us from Amman, Jordan, we have columnist for Palestine Pulse at Al Monitor, Mr. Dawood Kutab. Welcome to the program, to the both of you. Let's start off with Mona in Ramallah. Give us, first of all, your thoughts, what's taking place with regards to the Palestinian Foreign Ministry calling on the International Criminal Court to probe the Israeli crimes, and also bring us up to speed on the recent deadly Israeli aggression against Palestinians.
Well, according to a statement by the Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, it said that the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court must carry out his duties and employ all of the tools in order to deter Israeli crimes, investigate them, and hold perpetrators accountable. We have mentioned that yesterday Israeli forces carried out a deadly operation in Nablus city, northern the occupied West Bank. They killed five Palestinians. At least two of them were civilians, barbers. They were killed during this operation, and 21 Palestinians were wounded. At the same time, we are speaking, according to our sources yesterday, that three of those Palestinians were members or fighters of the newly formed Palestinian group, the Lion's Den. At the end of the day, all the international laws know and say very well that Palestinians have the right to defend themselves, even if they are members of any Palestinian resistance groups or civilians. These are Israeli occupiers. They should leave the Palestinian lands, according to all the Palestinians, according to the international laws. So Palestinians have the right, at the end of the day, to defend themselves. But what's being carried out every day in the occupied West Bank, as what happened yesterday, five were killed in Nablus, one Palestinian teen was killed in Nabi Saleh near Ramallah, just because Palestinians went out to express their rejection of the Israeli crimes. So Israel is doing its utmost to prevent Palestinians being engaged in the different forms of resistance.
Mr. Dawood Kutab, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry is calling the ICC to intervene. How can it intervene at this point when the Israeli regime won't cooperate with it? And also, we've seen constant pressure coming from the United States against officials from the ICC who want to get a better picture of what's taking place in the occupied Palestinian territories.
Well, what we're seeing now is the exposure of the lack of will, the political will of the international community. For months and months and months, the Palestinian leadership has been calling on the world to put to action their belief that there is a two-state solution that is possible. They have refused to recognize the Palestinian state. And as a result, and at the same time, the Israelis are refusing to negotiate. So we are in a very difficult political limbo, and there is a political vacuum. There is nobody that is in charge. The Israelis are interested in their own elections. They're not interested in the Palestinian situation. And so because of this political vacuum, There has been lots of warnings that there's going to be an explosion, yet nobody took that into consideration. Now we're seeing some of this explosion bursting up in everybody's face. Both Israelis, the Palestinians, and the international community are trying to figure out how to resolve it. But the solution is very easy. There has to be a political horizon. People have to see hope. Without hope, people will be frustrated, and you see what happens when people are frustrated.
And you mentioned hope. Hope is for changing of the status quo. How can that status quo change when we're seeing a lack of action from international bodies such as the United Nations, such as the Arab League,
absolutely,
such as the European Union?
You're absolutely right. Everybody, including the Islamic Cooperation Council, the Arab League, the UN, everybody is responsible for the state we are in now. And that's why people are taking guns in their own hands, and they're taking the law in their own hands, because they don't see anybody else doing anything. You know, Uday Tamimi, when he was killed, he left a note saying, I know we're not going to defeat the Israelis with one operation, but we need to have hope, because we need to have, people need to really think and carry arms to protect our own country and our own land. So we are in a difficult situation. I think the Israelis are mistaken in ignoring the calls of Palestinians for political dialogue, and the international community are refusing to put the proper pressure on them. And that includes the International Criminal Court, because, as you said, International Criminal Court is not allowed to operate in the occupied territories. The Israelis are refusing to investigate, including the crime of killing Shireen Abu Akleh, a well-known journalist. They are not doing anything to prove that they are a country of laws.
All right, thanks a lot. We're going to have to leave it there. Pamona Kandil joining us from Ramallah, and also thanks to Mr. Dawood Khattab joining us from Amman. And that's it with this edition of the News Review.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. In continuation of its wrong policies, the U.S. House administration increased the sale of arms to Taiwan with all its might, causing China's anger and concern. Taiwan is under the sovereignty of China, and America has recognized this issue, but the American government continues to interfere in China's internal affairs. And by illegally selling weapons to Taiwan, it is trying to separate it from the mainland of China. Analysts say that the U.S. is trying to implement the Ukrainian model in Taiwan and start a war in this region. Also, China charged the United States with violating its commitment to the One China principle and interfering in internal Chinese affairs. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media press and news agencies to shed more light on the issue. Stay tuned, please. SputnikNews.com wrote, the U.S. has funneled tens of billions in weapons to Taiwan since 1949 to purportedly help it maintain its autonomy from Beijing, even after officially acknowledging the island is part of China and severing formal relations with Taipei in 1979. As U.S. President Joe Biden recently presses Congress to approve another $1.1 billion in weapons and military support for Taiwan, experts from Taiwan and mainland China agreed that no amount of American pledges or aid can make Taiwan secure. Only cross-strait peace can do that. Thus far in his administration, Biden has sold $1.65 billion in weapons to the island, meaning the proposed deal would more than double the military aid Biden has given. The move comes weeks after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan and met with senior leaders, despite warnings by Beijing and the Pentagon alike that it would be provocative to do so. Several other U.S. lawmakers have followed suit, and the People's Liberation Army, PLD, held massive war drills all around the island in response. Professor Wang Yiwei, director of the Institute of International Affairs at Beijing's Renmin University of China, told Sputnik, "Actually, the U.S. should be worried about a military confrontation, conflict, or even war with China. But the Americans will lose face after Pelosi's visit and China's very strong response, which we saw during the military drill." Wang noted that U.S. foreign policy is driven gradually by the military-industrial complex, causing it to swing from supporting a long-term confrontation with Russia in Ukraine to conflicts in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan to selling weapons to Taiwan. He said America has had and even failed governance domestically, and then asks the world to pay the cost. They are playing the Taiwan card. They even want to copy the Ukraine model in the Taiwan Strait. It's only to sell weapons, only to target China or bash Russia. The website of ABC News explains more about the story, saying China's foreign ministry charged the United States with violating its commitment to the One China principle and interfering in internal Chinese affairs recently after the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee approved a new bill that could significantly increase American defense support for the island of Taiwan. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Mao Ning told reporters in Beijing that China had lodged serious complaints with Washington over the legislation, which still needs the U.S. House and President Joe Biden's approval to become law. Ning said the One China principle is the political foundation of China-U.S. relations, adding, if the bill continues to be deliberated, pushed forward, or even signed into law, it will greatly shake the political foundation of China-U.S. relations and cause extremely serious consequences to China-U.S. relations and peace and stability across Taiwan Strait. Under its One China policy, the United States recognizes the government in Beijing while allowing for informal relations and defense ties with Taipei. It takes a stance of a strategic ambiguity toward the defense of Taiwan, leaving it open whether it would respond militarily were the island attacked. The Taiwan Policy Act of 2022, approved by the committee recently, sets out to support the security of Taiwan and its right of self-determination, providing billions of dollars in defense funding to enhance its counter-intervention capabilities. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez, who co-authored a bipartisan bill with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, claimed that its focus is on deterrence and that China should not see it as a threat. The committee's approval of the bill comes at a time when tensions between Beijing and Washington were already high over Taiwan following the recent visit of U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Taipei. The website of Anti-War elaborates more about the story, saying a U.S. Senate committee on Wednesday, September 14th, approved a bill to dramatically boost American military support for Taiwan, a move that prompted warnings from both China and anti-war voices in the United States that such a policy increases the likelihood of armed conflict. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted 17-5 in favor of the Taiwan Policy Act of 2022, which, according to its text, promotes the so-called security of Taiwan, ensures purported regional stability, and deters that U.S. Senate claims People's Republic of China, PRC, aggression against Taiwan. It also threatens severe sanctions against the PRC for action against Taiwan. The bill comes during a period of heightened tensions between Washington and Beijing and follows recent Pelosi's provocative trip to Taiwan, a visit the Chinese government answered by suspending climate and military cooperation with the United States and forging closer ties with Russia. Dave DeCamp, news editor at antiwar.com, tweeted that if passed, the bill will be the most radical change in U.S. policy toward Taiwan since the 1970s and will make war much more likely. China vigorously protested the proposed legislation. Observers asserted that China may ramp up military measures in response to the bill.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and let us present you a brief but bright gem of an advice from the Prophet's 10th infallible heir, Imam Ali an-Naqi, peace upon him. This life of the world is a market in which some people gain and others lost.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Keeping Secrets. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of keeping secrets in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings, we see that Islam emphasizes on the personality or the respect of each other. Therefore, it also talks about the keeping the secrets of each other. Now, we should know that when we talk about the secrets, which is known as asrar or sir or raz, like in different languages they use these words, this is known as something which is need to be kept secret from a group of people maybe, or some special people or specific people should know about it, or maybe no one should know about it, and it's something which is related to someone's personal life. Therefore, these secrets can be related to the social aspect or the social life of a person, or it can be related to the personal life of the person. Therefore, it is necessary in Islam that we must keep the secrets of the people if we get know about the secrets. Why? Because if we disclose the secrets, it might damage the personality of a person. It might bring a danger to his life. Or maybe sometimes he can even lose his life in the disclosure of the secrets. Therefore, for the mu'mineen, for the believers, it is necessary to keep each other's secrets if they get to know. Or maybe if someone is sharing his secrets with someone, as someone who he can trust, then obviously we should not break his trust. We should keep the trust of the person. And this is one of the characteristics of the believers, that he is trustworthy, he is truthful, he keeps the secrets of the others, and obviously he is someone who can be trusted in all times, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of keeping secrets in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that every person has some secrets in their individual life as well as in their social life. Therefore, it is a necessity that if someone knows about that, he should keep those secrets with him and should not disclose. We know that everyone has it, and there is no one, no exception amongst the people. And there are some things which they never wanted anyone to know about it. And therefore, this is known as something which is personal or related to himself. And on the same basis, spying someone is being forbidden in Islam. We cannot spy on the others, but in the case of preventing the country from the enemies, that is the only case where it has been allowed. Otherwise, in Islam, even spying on others and looking into others' life, being after the secrets of the others, all these things are forbidden in the Islam, and Islam says not to perform such things. And therefore, we even see that even Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam has said, "Afsha'u sirri suqutun," that when someone discloses someone's secrets, then obviously it is just like falling down from a hill. So if someone discloses the secrets of the others, then Allah also never kept their secrets. We have many things which only Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows about us. Therefore, if we disclose the secrets of the others, and if it results the dishonor or humiliation of the person, then Allah never keeps our respect amongst the people. Therefore, we must be careful in these situations, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, art. Basic News. With the light.
Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's snowland at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on 2 major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and, you know, the subjects. And of course, we have in those areas the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a 3-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cakeland, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cakeland after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake kupud as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting darker elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. Takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants.
freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well, just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Ershan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Ershan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Ershan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online.
It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The UK economic turmoil is much deeper than described in news articles. According to Moody's ratings agency, the UK government's rating outlook was cut to negative from a stable recently. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Guardian wrote, "The UK's economic outlook has been downgraded from stable to negative by the rating agency Moody's because of political instability and high inflation." Moody's said the change in outlook was driven by heightened unpredictability in policymaking amid weaker growth prospects and high inflation, and risks to the UK debt affordability from likely higher borrowing and risk of a sustained weakening in policy credibility. Rating agencies rate a country on the strength of its economy and provide governments with a score based on the likelihood that they will be able to pay back debt. The rating affects how much it costs governments to borrow money in the international financial markets. According to the agency, an outlook period typically lasts 12 to 18 months. However, while the UK's economic outlook has been graded as negative, Moody's credit rating for the UK remains unchanged at A3. The agency said this rating reflects the UK's economic resilience despite the weakening in fiscal policy predictability in recent years. It added, the country's long-standing institutional framework remains strong and will continue to support the UK's ability to respond to shocks as seen during the pandemic. Furthermore, the structure of the UK government debt, with a very long average maturity of around 15 years, as well as a deep domestic investor base, adds a degree of resilience to the credit profile in the face of shocks. The UK's local and foreign currency country ceilings remain unchanged at A. The three-notch gap between the local currency ceiling and the sovereign rating is driven by the government's relatively small footprint in the economy, a fairly robust external payments position, and a diversified economy. The Office for National Statistics, ONS, reported that a jump in debt interest grew borrowing beyond the expectations of economists, laying bare the challenge facing the Chancellor and new Prime Minister before the fiscal event at the end of this month. The latest reading for borrowing, excluding state-owned banks, marked the second highest September on record, only surpassed during the height of COVID-19 pandemic, ONS said. Borrowing in September outpaced the predictions of economists, who had forecast £17 billion for the month and was significantly above the £14.8 billion estimated by the Office for Budget Responsibility back in March. Hahn said strong public finances are the foundation of an economy. To stabilize markets, I have been clear that protecting public finances means difficult decisions lies ahead. We will do whatever is necessary to drive down debt in the medium term and to ensure that taxpayers' money is well spent, putting the public finances on a sustainable path as we grow the economy. The recently appointed chancellor has already reversed a number of key financial policies announced last month by predecessor Kwasi Kwarteng, including plans to scrap the increase in corporation tax to 25%. The latest ONS data revealed that increased borrowing was driven by £7.7 billion of debt interest payments for the month, reflecting an increase of £2.5 billion compared with the same month in 2021. It was the highest September interest figure since records began in 1997. Significantly higher debt interest payments linked to retail price index, RPI inflation, drove the increase, the ONS said. According to RT, the UK government's rating outlook was cut to negative from stable by Moody's Ratings Agency. In a statement, the agency pointed to the heightened unpredictability in policymaking amid a volatile domestic political landscape, which challenges the UK's ability to manage the shock arising from weaker growth prospects and high inflation. Moody's reassessment follows the resignation of British Prime Minister Liz Truss after just 6 weeks in office. Her cabinet had pledged huge tax cuts without explaining how they would be funded, leading to a spike in government borrowing costs. The new chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, reversed most of the tax cuts, but according to Moody's, there is still a risk of a sustained weakening in policy credibility. The negative outlook assessment does not mean the UK's credit rating has been downgraded, but indicates that it could be downgraded later on. An outlook period typically lasts 12 to 18 months, Moody's says. Two other rating agencies, including S&P and Fitch, also earlier lowered the UK's outlook to negative. Britain is grappling with a cost of living crisis, with inflation in September rising 10.1% year-on-year, according to estimates published earlier this week by the Office for National Statistics. The latest figure matches the 40-year high in the British Consumer Price Index, reached in July. Bloomberg reported the UK's annual inflation could surge to 15% by the start of next year as further sharp increases in energy prices push up the cost of living. Price pressures are likely to be stronger and last longer than expected unless the government develops relief measures for households struggling to pay their energy bills, the news outlet wrote. The cost of goods and services in the UK had already spiked to a 40-year high in September, with the Consumer Price Index CPI gaining 10.1% in the 12 months to September 2022, according to estimates published recently by the UK Office for National Statistics. This week, Britain's new Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt announced plans to subsidise fuel bills for households, but the proposed measure will last only until April. And analysts fear that consumers and businesses will still be exposed to soaring gas and electricity costs. An economist at ING told Bloomberg, the key question for 2023 inflation outlook now relates to the energy price guarantee.